Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hi, this is Josh Marshall, and this is the Josh Marshall Podcast. We have today, we have a return appearance by Seth Hetena, who has a book out called Trump Russia. Great book, not the most original title. I'm going to say that right now, Seth. But oh, I guess, you know, that's, no, didn't it start with a blog? You started doing a blog that was, yeah, Trump Russia, and that's the evolution of the name.
Yeah.
You know, we did a podcast about Seth's book, I don't know, maybe 3 months ago, 3 or 4 months ago.
It was over the summer, I want to say.
Yeah,
right?
I guess maybe in the summer.
May I want to say.
Was it really that early?
I think so.
I'm not sure it was. In any case, as I said then, I'm a big, big fan of this book. It's one of the ones, I don't have a lot of time to read books about politics, frankly, because it's what politics I do every day. So I tend to kind of, you know, glance at things and put them down. I went all the way through this one. It's really, really good. Seth is a, we've been following Seth's work for like a dozen years, because Seth was one of the guys on what for us is one of the sort of archetypal canonical public corruption stories of the early 21st century. Anyway, we're going to get to all that. We wanted to talk with Seth again because there are things in his book that just look a little different, become a little more resonant and immediate because of what we have found out over the last 48 hours about Michael Cohen and this project for a Trump Tower in Moscow that was happening not just at the very tailing off at the very beginning of the presidential campaign, but like almost all the way through the presidential campaign.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Past the convention.
Yeah,
sure.
Exactly. So, okay. So before we get to... before we get to Seth, let me quickly remind you that the Josh Marshall Podcast is brought to you by Great East Cold Brew Iced Coffee. If you love cold brewed iced coffee, you know how expensive your habit can be. We're talking $4 to $5 for a cup of coffee at the local coffee shop, over $100 a month, and that's just money. Now add up all the time you spent waiting in lines at the coffee shop. It's not exactly convenient. Luckily, there's a better way. Order Great East Cold Brew online and have it delivered straight to your door. You don't have to go anywhere. Of course you want it straight to your door. You can pour a glass of Great East Famous Cold Brew straight from your fridge for less than $1 a cup, saving over $1,000 a year. And shipping is always free. Are you ready to give it a swirl? Get 20% off your first order at greateastcoldbrew.com with promo code TPM. That's promo code TPM. Before we get started, let me say hello to my co-host, David Tainer.
Hey, Josh.
How are you doing?
Good. Nice to be here.
Yeah. Well, we've been back in that mode where like this is one of those weeks where...
A lot of time in the studio.
There's
yeah.
something new. Well, not time in the studio, but there's just something. There's yeah. new news, like every moment.
Yeah, absolutely.
Seth, explain to me what we have learned over the last 48 hours through the prism of what you learned in the course of writing your book.
Well, Michael Cohen's plea, second plea, I guess, was kind of it shook the ground. The funny thing about this story is that this information is all out there, and then it takes there seems to be reporters who won't touch certain stories for various reasons. But this one, this plea deal, forces everyone on the same page. And where we are now is Michael Cohen has admitted that he lied to Congress. He lied about a project in Moscow called Trump World Tower. That was originally what he told Congress was that he had limited to no contact with Trump, and it was something he pursued on his own, and it petered out in January or something like that. That wasn't true, he says now. And now the tower continued, and Trump was deeply involved in the tower. So were members of his family, we've learned. And the tower work continued, as you mentioned in the setup, you know, past the convention. Trump is winning primaries. He's the GOP nominee, and he's still trying to build a tower in Moscow. Now, you know, it would be one thing if it would be bad enough if he's trying to build a tower with and he's negotiating with Russian business officials. What he's doing, what's going on, is they're negotiating with the Russian government. These are government officials.
Right.
And no one seems to notice that that's unusual, that the government's suddenly involved in a real estate deal. And, you know, we just keep learning new facts. So they were pitching Putin to have the penthouse of this building. I mean, right. Literally, Vladimir Putin to have the penthouse. A $50 million, I don't know where they came up with that number, but
if you're setting the price, you can call whatever you
I
want.
I guess so.
They were just going to give it to him, is that right?
Yeah, which is a big no-no. But you know, not allowed.
But you know what the reason, you know why they were going to, so what, you know, because it would drive up the price of the rest of the units, because then all the oligarchs are going to flock to this building to be near Putin.
Right.
And just pay whatever to be in his, you know.
Just to run into him in the elevator kind of thing.
Yeah, like Paul Manafort did at Trump Tower.
And
let me just add this. So it's bad enough if it's Russian business. It's bad enough if it's government officials. It's even worse because there are intelligence people involved in this deal.
And sort of on both sides of the Russian government, Russian business, you got ex-intelligence people or people in government who are...
Yeah. I mean, the speculation I would like to see is was this whole thing an intelligence operation of some kind? Trump has been chasing, and this is in my book, but Trump has been, this is the shiny object, the little that he's wanted forever. He's been going to Russia since like 1987, looking at real estate deals. His first overseas project in 96 was going to be not in Toronto or not in London, but in Moscow. And that didn't, you know, that
wasn't there also, there was a trip back in the 80s, right? Which, so this goes back 30 plus years.
Yes.
His thing with Moscow.
Yes.
Let me ask you this. I think you talk, you know, it's always one of these things the guest needs to kind of like finesse, like, oh, I read your book. Sure. You know, but I read your book, but it's been 4 or 5 months now. So I'm not crystal clear. There's a thing where the 80s era, which is obviously the Soviet era, trip to Moscow, he gets chatted up by someone in the U.S. first, and that leads to, what was the story there?
So the 87 trip is the most interesting and the most unexplored of all his many ventures in Russia because, you know, Donald Trump's not a national figure at this time. He's kind of a local,
local tabloid figure in New York.
Right.
Basically.
Like the local, local kind of big mouth real estate developer.
Yeah.
Guy in the New York Post and the Daily News, but not much else beyond that. And so he is at a dinner and the Soviet ambassador is there. And, according to Trump, that he wows the Soviet ambassador with his amazing personality.
Right.
That, the Soviet ambassador's daughter has written a little interesting story that it was actually, it wasn't hard to figure out. Trump was susceptible to flattery. That's what they did. And they extend this invitation for him to come, expenses paid, to Moscow. So he flies with Ivana on July 4th, of course, and they land in Moscow and they're tooling around and seeing sights. And, what's interesting to me is what happens when he comes back. So he goes over there to scout real estate deals ostensibly. He comes back and within a few months, I think it was not much longer after he returned, he's announcing that he's hinting about a run for the presidency. And he takes out ads in the New York Times and the Washington Post saying things like, Japan is taking advantage of, literally, Japan is taking advantage of us. Politicians around the world are laughing at us.
Right.
You know, the same kind of shtick that we hear today all the time. And, those are KGB talking points to drive a wedge between the U.S. and Japanese alliance. And somebody talked to him somewhere and, influenced him.
Right.
And so
his sort of first documented interest in national politics as like, I'm going to run for something, is really closely tied in time with his first jaunt to Moscow.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Now, let me ask you this. So there's, I don't know, at least three projects, efforts, you know, at various points over that 30-year period to build a thing in Moscow. Do you have a sense, if we can set aside, yes, that he became a Russian agent in 1987 or something like that. Do we have a sense? I mean, Moscow is a global historic city. It's right. not just any city.
Right.
But I've never heard of Trump being like, I need a Trump Berlin or right. I need a Trump Paris or a Trump Tokyo. There's a lot of cities out there.
Yeah.
But there really does seem to have been this fixation.
Yeah.
So setting aside any maximal theories, do we have a sense of why?
Why he was so interested in Moscow?
Yeah,
I don't answer. To be honest with you, I don't know. I think he was captivated by it early. If I can speculate a little bit.
Yeah, of course.
So look, Trump, you know, is not somebody like Trump is not going to go over well in London. He's not liked in Paris. You know, Canadians are pretty reserved. He's too brash. He's too big. But in Russia, they're exuberant. They're big, colorful characters. And someone like Trump, you know, he's welcome and he's loved in Russia still to this day.
Right, right.
And I think that's something that matters a lot to Trump, as we know, that he needs to be loved. He needs to be adored. And he was adored in Russia. So I always come back to that he – there was this natural kind of symbiotic
– Right, you right. know, well, it seems it's certainly – it's one thing in the Soviet era, but certainly in the post-Soviet era, when you have a whole very brutal culture based on maximal and showy and gauche wealth mixed with violence right. and over-the-top personalities. I mean, yeah, that's Trump land,
yeah,
right?
Totally, so, totally.
And if we're talking 1987, that's the very, very late Soviet era. It's almost into the post-Soviet oligarch,
right.
you know, just coming up on that.
But it's still the Soviet era, and that's another interesting thing. So, you know, this is the – you could call Trump maybe the an embodiment of a certain kind of American capitalism. You know, Warren Buffett might be another example, and Trump's at this other end. But so the Soviet Union is bringing a very public, very brash millionaire – to Russia. Now, the Soviet Union has abolished private wealth, and it's a place where millionaires are still being lampooned as fat cats and top hats, and they're ridiculed and laughed at. Mm-hmm. So why bring a millionaire on a public tour to it? Just there's something really odd about that whole setup.
And right.
I think he was being watched and being, you know, being studied, and maybe, you know, you can go down a dark rabbit hole, but right. maybe being groomed. You know?
Right, right. Well, it's most of what seemed like rabbit holes 2 years ago are just like very conservative, cautious appraisals at this point. So let me ask you this. One of the big things in your book is Trump's history with organized crime,
right.
both the version of organized crime that is still the sort of the pervasive one in American popular culture, which is Italian-American organized crime, and then evolving into post-Soviet emigre organized crime. Felix Sater comes entirely out of that world.
Right.
He's the one who was working most closely with Michael Cohen on this last project in 2015, 2016. And Michael Cohen knew Felix. They knew Felix as teenagers.
Yeah.
So they go way back, and they both, even though Michael was born in the United States, they're both in that kind of Brighton Beach emigre kind of scene.
Right.
So when you look at this, the stuff we have found out in the last 48 hours, interpret that through the prism of the Cohen-Sater relationship.
Okay. Well, Felix Sater's whole reason for being in the Trump Organization seems to have been to get this Trump Tower Moscow to happen. And he made trips in 2005, I think it was, and they were negotiating over the site of this former pencil factory. And, you know, that collapsed. That was before Michael Cohen was even in the Trump Organization. Michael Cohen comes in and they are, you know, they Felix, I think Felix has been a little misunderstood. He's, you know, yes, his dad was a mobster, and yes, he is a felon, and yes, he did this Wall Street scam. But he's not some like he gets pulled into this world where people are controlling Trump and he's part of this. I think he's just an operator.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's what he is. He's just a guy. He's just an operator, and he saw an opportunity to get this tower rolling, and he pitched Cohen on it. And they're, you know, they know each other, and Cohen is going for it. And there's other things that have happened at this time. So Cohen, you know, early on in the Trump campaign, Cohen was like the point guy.
Yeah.
Right? And then he had this famous kind of conversation. I think it was with the
Brianna Keeler,
with the Daily Beast, where
Oh, yeah.
Where raping your wife is what I forget what the
details. Cohen said, look, legally, you can't actually rape your wife, so right. This is stupid.
Right.
When you can, that's not what the law says.
Right, and I'm going to rip your. I'm going to. Yeah, what I'm going to do to you is going to be disgusting.
Yeah, this was. I think it was Tim Mak.
Yes.
At the Daily Beast,
yes.
Who's now, I believe, at NPR, doing the piece, and Cohen, you know, he's in his full, you know, Sopranos heavy
right.
on behalf of Donald Trump kind of mode.
Right.
And he, as you said, kind of like, you print this, I'm going to do you ugly, you'll never survive, and all this
right.
kind of crap.
What I'm going to do to you is going to be absolutely disgusting.
Yeah.
That's the line that sticks in my head.
Exactly.
So that hurt him. So he
right.
was kind of shoved aside. And I think this tower may have been his way to, you know, get back his credit.
Yes. Yeah, interesting.
You know what I mean? That he's really on the outs, and he knows his boss has always wanted this shiny object, this
yeah,
tower in Moscow.
Yeah.
And here's his buddy, Felix Sater, that they've known each other since they were teenagers in Brighton Beach. And they're going to, you know, and the Felix Sater has these emails, you know, buddy boy, you know, Felix Sater almost seems to understand this on some level, like, buddy boy, we're going to get Trump elected, and we're going to get Putin on the program, and we're going to make this happen. And it's going to, you know, and I think that's the kind, it's almost like a Goodfellas kind of,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
You know, that's what it was, I think.
Well, it's also very, one of the things about the, because we've known some of those emails for a long time. And what's very weird is that they treat it as a given that the fact that Trump builds a building in Moscow, like, that's going to seal the presidency deal.
Right.
Whereas even if you take out all of the weird foreign policy externalities, no one cares if you, I mean, that's never going to be anything in terms of whether Donald Trump, so it's kind of weird what world they're living in, and they're getting themselves sort of juiced up and
right.
excited and
right.
everything. Okay, so let's ask this. So if that is the case, in some sense, even if Trump knows about it, Cohen is partly motivated to get back in his boss's good graces
right.
because he kind of screwed up on the
right.
on the Daily Beast story. So does that mean, well, maybe it doesn't have anything, maybe there's nothing nefarious coming from the Russia side? How does that fit together?
I think there's something super nefarious
okay.
coming from the Russia side. I think the reason why Putin, so again, this distinction between, I tried to draw at the outset, that it's one thing to be negotiating with Russian businessmen. It's another thing to be negotiating with Russian government officials. Because what is happening is Putin is looking for leverage. He's looking for leverage in a million different ways.
Yeah.
This probably goes on in every campaign,
mm-hmm.
but most people have sophisticated campaigns that just shut the door on these things, right?
Right, right.
But here, the doors are all open. You know, come on in. And you've got George Papadopoulos out there, you know, meeting with this shadowy professor, Mifsud, right, who's telling him about emails that the Russians have. You've got the tower deal going on. You've got Roger Stone and his band of merry men who are trying to get the goods from WikiLeaks.
Right, right.
You've got Paul Manafort coming into the campaign in March 2016. All these things are coming together.
Right, right.
At one time. And, you know, again, so the fact that you have intelligence people and government officials and intelligence people involved in a real estate deal.
Right.
you know, there's, I think Putin was looking for leverage and he got it because Trump was just wide open and just, you know, maybe he thought he wasn't going to win and he was, this was all a lark but now what's happened and the reason why Michael Cohen is pleading guilty is because the lie has to be maintained. Trump has to be protected. And part of Cohen's lie was that Trump didn't know when right. in fact he did.
Right.
And part of, it's all about these lies. It's all there. Everyone is lying. George Papadopoulos is lying. Michael Flynn is lying. Roger Stone, I have no doubt, is probably lying. They're all lying to, I think, because we're only seeing parts of the picture here, but with all these events coming together, it would be Powerball odds if these things weren't coordinated.
Right.
And what we're not seeing is the information flow going up to Trump and coming back down and being ferried back out to Russia.
Right. So let's talk about Sater for a second, because
okay.
I take your point that like it's probably wrong to see Felix Sater as some sort of like Russian government agent, that he's just, you know, that being a businessman is a cover and he's
right.
an operative. But he has lots of ties into the Russian organized crime world,
right.
Into the government world, at least to an extent. And those worlds obviously overlap
yes.
in significant ways. So, even if he is, you know, even if it's just, you know, mutual interest, it seems to me that, you know, he's talking to lots of people over there.
Totally.
And he says, you know, Trump's running. I know Trump. I can bring, you know, I can. Do you want to talk to Trump? So it's a sort of a channel of information that they want. And as you say, this comes not that long after the initial Ukraine Crimea crisis.
Right.
Russia is hit by these sanctions.
Right.
They really want to get out of under that. They really don't want Hillary Clinton to be president.
Right.
So they're kind of looking for every angle, and
right.
and they probably know historically, because you know, even if we don't have a maximal view, Trump's been in the mix with these guys forever, and they know he's a purely transactional guy.
Totally,
he's not going to say like, I'd like to make that money, but I'm now a politician,
right.
and I need to think about America.
Or,
like, that's not going to happen.
Or, I won't do business with you because you have a criminal record, you know, or...
Yeah,
or,
yeah that's not going to happen.
Right. He'll take money from anybody.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's, you know, then they know that. Yeah.
And that's why I don't really... you just posited, and many people do, and it's clearly a good thing to posit that, you know, maybe he's doing all this stuff because he didn't think he's going to be elected, and
right.
kind of, so it's never, you know, the shit's never going to hit the fan.
Right.
No one cared. No one's going to care 2 years later that failed presidential candidate Donald Trump also was trying to negotiate a hotel deal.
Right.
My sense is I'm not even sure we have to posit that
no.
because, like, it's I see him as more, you know, almost what he said in that tweet like yesterday. Am I not supposed to take opportunities where I find them?
Right.
Am I a chump?
Right.
You know, I just don't think it occurs to him. And
right.
and especially, I don't think to this day, and this is where it's not a matter of naive, it's a matter of like political amorality. I just don't think he thinks this is a good deal for me, but it really kind of it's not good for the country. It's just, that calculus is just alien.
Well,
to him.
The key word I think you hit on is amorality. You know, I don't know if you remember this New York Times op-ed by the anonymous.
Oh yeah.
Senior Trump official.
Yeah, whatever that term of art was that they used. Yeah.
So the line in there is the root. This is the quote. The root of the problem is the president's amorality. He is an amoral man. There is no principle he won't betray. There is no relationship he won't throw under the bus. There's no money he won't turn down from no matter who it is. And that's who Donald Trump is. He isn't, you know, that's who our president is. He's an amoral businessman who is friendly to the devil, is a mob friendly businessman, you know,
right,
as I
right,
said
right.
last time I was here. But, you know, yeah, I think. You're right. I mean, I'm not going to argue. I don't think he thinks the way he's shameless. He doesn't think like, oh boy, this is going to look bad if I get elected, or you know, maybe I shouldn't. It's just money, and money is green, and that's it.
Right, right. So, we assume that what Michael Cohen has pled guilty to lying about is just part of what he is sharing, and this is kind of, he needs to plead to this to kind of you know, get in the picture with Robert Mueller and sort of gain credit towards not spending a significant period of time in prison.
Right.
What do you see as the next, knowing these guys' backgrounds, what do you expect next? What are things that based on your, you know, voluminous reporting on these guys that you expect to hear?
Well, I just to take your point a little further. So, you know, Michael Cohen, I think there's a clearing of the decks here. So Michael Cohen, we know already, he's recorded his own client. You know, this is a guy who keeps receipts, right?
Right.
He may have detailed notes. He may have other tapes. But if you're going to introduce those things as evidence, you've got to clear the decks here. And I think that's what's happened, is that Michael Cohen has been resolved of all his criminal liability has been cleared now. He's accounted for it. He's taken responsibility. And now he can be a useful witness.
Right.
And I think that's one thing I expect to see is more detailed. And, you know, he spent 70 hours talking to the Mueller's
team. Special counsel's office.
So I think there's going to be more coming from that. You know, Don Jr. has huge liability here. You know, he said he had nothing to do with this Trump Tower project. I think flat out said that under oath. You know, then Trump himself, just like a big boy, wrote his own answers to the special counsel's questions. And we don't know what he said, but you know, he could be on the hook. You know, we don't know what the answers are. But if he is saying the same thing his son is, that he had no involvement with this Trump Tower project, you know, he can be prosecuted for the same lying charge that everybody else is being prosecuted for in this whole case.
Right. Yeah. No. I mean, I was also interested that Mueller's office did not have to add that family line to that, I guess, criminal information or whatever the legal document was. That seemed clear to kind of say, like, it's not just you.
Right.
We know your kids were involved, too. A lot of them have, at least some of them have testified. So that seemed like a real kind of shot across the bow.
Totally. And I think Robert Mueller doesn't tweet. He doesn't leak. He's like a submarine that periodically surfaces. And then you're like, well, how the hell did it get over there? And, you know, what I think he is doing, maybe he's communicating with his court filings, and one of the audiences may be Congress. That Congress, you know, that Devin Nunes has not been very forthcoming with transcripts. I'm guessing here that, you know,
I think I was watching an interview with not Adam Schiff but another member of that committee, and he actually said that the reason that the charging document, criminal information or whatever, had to reference a letter that Cohen sent and a Senate transcript, because the House has not shared anything.
Right.
None of the transcripts.
Exactly.
Which is really, like, shocking.
Yeah.
Like, what? Like, does the House of Representatives see a federal prosecutor as, like, an adverse party to itself? I mean, that's weird.
Apparently.
Yeah. Well, clearly they do, but it's worth recognizing that is a strange thing.
So one of the audiences here, I think, is Adam Schiff. You know, and I think that he's I've seen statements from him saying, we're going to be sharing this information with the special prosecutor.
Right.
And that, you know, so you're asking what's coming next. You know, people are going to be going over those transcripts with magnifying glass, looking for what was said and you know, where that lines up with Michael Cohen's new information. And clearly,
do we have a clear understanding at this point of why this deal eventually fell apart? We know that there's that thing where Michael Cohen, I believe on June 14th, tells Felix Sater, hey, I can't go to Moscow. That's off.
Right.
But that doesn't mean that the deal's off. I've heard conflicting accounts of this.
You know, I don't know. But you can look at the timeline. That the day he said the deal's off is the day the Washington Post reported that
the first report of the hacks of the DNC.
Right, that Russia had penetrated the campaign.
Yeah.
That's very interesting timing. but I can't take it beyond, you know, I wish I could. I wish I knew what Robert Mueller knows at this point.
Yeah, I mean, I've been sort of wondering, because you can certainly, you know, the idea that they were thinking he was going to go, and that the idea that any of this was happening is totally insane to start with.
Right.
But you can even still be fairly insane and, like, you know, like, all right, we're negotiating with, like, Vladimir Putin, this great business deal, and, like, whoa, there's this thing about them hacking into the, like, okay, we got to back off a little here. This is a little too hot. At least the public, you know, at least traveling there and stuff like that.
Or, you're being very charitable there, which is nice of you.
That's my middle name.
But, you know, the more sinister view is that the whistle had been blown.
Yeah.
And they, you know, the gig was going to be up now.
Yeah.
You know, this has been found out. We've got to pull out. We can't deal with Russia publicly in this. We have to shut it down. So that, you know, that's one way of look, you know, another way of looking at it. Really, you know, really, if unless you take the most innocuous, insanely innocuous view of this whole situation, that Trump was just happened to be doing a business deal. That he had no intention of cultivating any favors from Putin. You know, it would have to be this impossible situation for this not to be, a situation where Donald Trump is exposed in some way, politically, legally. I mean, it's the nightmare scenario here.
Yeah, no, it really is, and I think you can see that even when he is on a major international trip with, like, you know, back-to-back-to-back meetings with every foreign dignitary in the world, he's still, like, freaking out on Twitter.
Right.
And, like, totally going off, even by his standards.
Right.
Pretty over-the-top stuff. Tell us again, title of the book, the details, where people can find it. I guess the Universal Amazon is where you can find it. But give us the details so people, because this is I really got a lot out of this book. It's really good. So I recommend it to everybody.
Yeah, thank you. You know, basically, you know, just to give a 10-second summary here, it's Donald Trump has been chasing Russian money for decades. And that's what's missing from today's coverage. And that's what my book is really looking at. And it's Trump Russia, A Definitive History. You can buy it. Please buy it at a bookstore, but Amazon also sells it. So, it's doing pretty well, so I think people will enjoy it.
That's great. Let me just remind everybody that the Josh Marshall Podcast is brought to you by Grady's Cold Brew Iced Coffee. Get 20% off your first order at gradyscoldbrew.com with promo code TPM. That's promo code TPM. Thanks, Seth.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Oh, I love it.
David, talk to you next week.
Bye, guys.